Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the show today. We're going to start today's show by looking at what it means to live the courageous life. We'll be talking with Dr. Ron Brown, author of The Courageous Life, in just one moment. Coming in the second half hour of the show, we'll talk with local psychologist Dr. Stephen Curtis about what's going on with our kids, why so many of them are displaying puzzling behavior, what it could mean, and what parents and grandparents must know before rushing to their doctors for a diagnostic label and medication. But first, let me introduce Dr. Ron Brown. He asks you to imagine how your life would change if you lived your life without fear. He wants you to realize that you were created for a unique purpose and that your unique dreams and purpose can be achieved in time and by faith. Ron Brown is an organizational effectiveness consultant and executive coach. He specializes in helping clients implement creative solutions for organizational development and also provides strategic coaching for individuals, sales teams, and emerging leaders. Welcome, Ron Brown.
Thank you, Vicki, for having me. Excited to share with you today.
Yeah, pleasure to have you. This is always a great topic to talk about. And right on page one of your book, you get right to the heart of why we do these kind of shows, and that's to help us remember that life is precious and that we need to stay aware of how we spend our minutes because they add up to hours, days, and years. Your new book is called The Courageous Life, Proven Methods for Reaching Your Dreams and Potential. So tell us why you wrote this book. What was your goal?
I think my goal was to help people dig out and define for themselves who they are, what they want their lives to represent and be about. And then I wanted to come alongside them and encourage them to indeed step out into their fears, step out of their comfort zone, through barriers, and help bring those dreams that they have in their hearts and their minds and their spirit into reality.
What,
and go ahead.
I was going to say, and what does the courageous life mean to you?
To me, the courageous life is about pursuing, with courage, of course, the passions and dreams that lie within your heart. You know, it's about clearly defining what you want your life to represent, what you want your life to stand for and accomplish, and then stepping out, you know, in to courageously bring that to reality.
Mm.
And this, you know, there's a song by Tom Petty says, you know, running down your dream, going wherever it leads. And I think that's a great song, and the courageous life is about, you know, running down your dream, first clarifying it, and then running down your dream and being willing to go wherever it leads. And that usually will mean stepping outside your comfort zone and through your fears and toward your dreams. So.
Right. I have to share this quote with our listeners. In the foreword of your book, it was written by Jack Canfield, and he said this. He said, "To live the courageous life, you cannot tiptoe into the future." I'll say that again. To live the courageous life, you cannot tiptoe into the future. So tell us what that means to you.
Well, I think a lot of people they choose to be driven by fear and doubt, which stymies them and just causes them to sit still or stand still versus choosing to live a life of courage and belief and faith. Faith in who they are and what their dreams are and who they're created to be. And if we're fearful, we're going to tiptoe through life. We're going to tiptoe around our potential and really question, you know, the dreams that have been pounding in our heart many times for years. And that is why courage is so important. Defining our dreams is only half the step, but unless you have the belief and the courage to step toward their dreams, they'll stay forever dormant. And if they stay forever dormant, I believe the result is slowly moving into a life of apathy and even depression and possibly even addiction as you try to use pleasure to, you know, drown out those dreams that keep pounding in your heart.
Right. Why do you think so many of us, and this is true, that so many of us are actually afraid to even admit we have a dream?
I think, there's many reasons, but a lot of us are like our comfort zone that we've carefully created in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have habits and daily rituals that we've taken maybe even years to create. You know, our family circle, our friendship circle, our job security, and we inherently know that if we're going to step toward a dream, it means dismantling and deconstructing what we've spent years to construct. And because our dreams always lie outside our comfort zone, our dreams lie outside our current life and the way we have it set up and structured. And we have to be willing to leave the career, move to a new state. We have to be willing to deconstruct and so that we can construct a better life that's wrapped around what we believe our passions and dreams and what we are created to be about and do.
True. I like that, deconstruct to reconstruct.
Yeah. And some people try to construct their dream while protecting their current life, and that does not happen because we do not, there's only so much we can do. And if we're trying to focus on too many things, none of it gets done well.
Right. So let's look at some of the most common barriers that keep us off track. And before we get onto that, you just talking about comfort zone, and you share a line in the book, you know, sure, it's, I like to lie in my lazy boy or your sofa or something, stuffing my face with popcorn. It's really comfortable, but, you know, after a while it gets boring.
Yeah. And very unsatisfactory. Zig Ziglar writes, this is a great quote. He says, the basic problem is that many people are afraid of their own dreams.
Mm.
And this seems odd, and when I first read it, but I've become more and more convinced that this statement is true, and it's because, you know, why would someone be fearful of their own dreams, of their own desires? And the reason is because our dreams, like I said, always lie outside our comfort zone.
Yeah.
And they, I think that is the number one issue. But other issues that prevent people from stepping out and living their dreams are lack of faith, lack of belief of who they are and their abilities, and waiting. I think that some people wait for their future to be given to them. They're waiting in a current job, waiting for the promotion, waiting for their dreams to be handed to them on some type of silver platter, and it does not happen that way.
Right, right.
Some people have false humility, which prevents them from pursuing a dream. Like they say, they don't want to exert themselves and seem pretentious and seem like they're greater than the next person, and that false humility prevents them from stepping out into the unknown.
That often stems from childhood, doesn't it? When we're told, "Who do you think you are?"
And I think also lack of it. Some people just cannot pursue a dream because they lack the energy. They do not have the diet, the physical fitness. Their welfare is so depleted, they just do not have the energy to step in a new direction.
Yeah, I like in the book you say, and this is a common theme in many motivational workshops, and I think in the poem Desiderata, that fatigue makes cowards of us all.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of the night when we're tired, everything looks quite scary.
Yeah.
So,
there's a great book called The Power of Full Engagement, which really talks about that issue, and I think very well so, but unless you have a minimal level of energy, you're just not going to be able to get up in the morning and you know, and try to move in a new direction.
Mm.
I think one thing that I see over and over, even in our American culture, is the pursuit of pleasure. The pursuit of pleasure will drive any dream away because this is where we're seeking pleasure, you know, whether it's through food or sex or drugs or whatever, becomes more important than reaching your potential and reaching out toward your goals and dreams.
So we get caught up in the moment. Is that what you're saying? We're caught up in, you know, instant gratification.
Not really caught up in the moment, but caught up in instant gratification. We desire to feel good. We desire to, for instant gratification versus delayed, gratification, which takes, because if we're going to pursue a dream, we have to put things on hold. We have to maybe save money. Maybe we have to not go to the movies, but we need to, you know, prepare for a new job we want to have or whatever, versus, you know, just having fun.
Yeah. Now, is that a sign of our times? Because everything is so instant this and instant that,
yeah.
And you know, make it happen right now.
I think it is, and people see. You know, we play the comparison game, and when we play the comparison game, we always lose because we tend to compare ourselves to people who are better off than we are, skinnier than we are, better looking than we are. And so when we're playing this comparison game, we're saying, I can't put things on hold. I gotta keep pursuing this image stuff so I can at least compete and appear equivalent to, you know, my friends and peers.
Mm.
And so our need to compete and appear prosperous or whatever we need, or whatever that felt need is, prevents us from sitting back, taking the time to disconnect and clarify what do we really want our life to be about. And then it also prevents us from, you know, like I said before, having the courage to deconstruct our current life to reconstruct it in the area that's really focused on our potential and dreams.
Yeah.
That is a journey that many people, I mean, that not a lot of people in the States are doing that, so that what makes it even more difficult is it's a journey that most people have to take alone.
It is. It's very true, because I know there have been times when I've had to duck out of, you know, things that I wanted to do because I wanted to pursue something else. And friends, you know, mean well. Oh, we want
yeah.
you to come. We want you there. And it's very tempting. And sometimes I've succumbed. But you do have that pressure from other people, and you do have to be very firm. And that can be very can be very lonely at times when you're so focused on getting that done.
And, you know, the odd thing about dreams, which makes it also difficult or unique, is that, you know, our dreams are uniquely ours. Therefore, a lot of people might not understand, why in the world is that your dream? And they'll try to even talk you out of it. Like, I have a friend who wants to be a NASCAR pit crew guy.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I would want to do with my life is sit around and bang my knuckles on engines, you know, on car parts.
Right.
And so I might, if I was more pragmatic in my thinking, I would say, why do you want to do that? I mean, you work 18-hour days and you're gone from your family. But for him, it's his dream, and so he needs to go for it.
Yeah, I know you have a dream. What's your dream?
My dream is to help people come alongside individuals and organizations and help them reach their potential.
Mm. And you also have another dream that's going to happen in the Caribbean. What's that dream?
Oh, the dream. Well, yeah, I have a dream. I mentioned a dream that I have of taking my family to Europe for a 3-week vacation. And the point where I'm talking about that in the book is that, you know, sometimes lesser dreams, lesser goals can eat up our grand goal and our grand dream. You know, I love going to Florida. I love the beach. I love watching the surf come in. Our family loves the beach. And so we, you know, have this habit, you know, our current comfort zone of going down the beach. We know where we go. We know we want to park. We, you know, we know where the perfect 7-Eleven is and all that to buy our stuff. But you know what? Our family, we have a grand vacation dream, and that is to go to Europe for 3 weeks as a family and take the rail and visit some friends we have over there. And for me to courageously go after that dream, and we're in the process of doing that, we have to make decisions and commitments that steer us away from, you know, going to Florida twice a year or whatever that might be.
Right. I think Dr. Stephen Covey calls that giving up the good for the great. We have
right.
to give up the good for the great, because when something is good, if you have a good job and you get paid good money, but it's really not what you want to do. And there is a lot of pressure from other people when you're in that situation, you know, to be, quote, be sensible and realize you how good you have it.
Right. And the sad thing is that if you don't do that, if you don't have the courage to go after who you in your spirit believe you're created to be and created to do, I really firmly believe that that leads to slow emerging depression.
Mm.
And that why people might be experiencing depression. I know there's clinical reasons and medical reasons, and you know, I fully embrace that, but I think there is a group of people who are entering into a state of depression because they know their life is not on track to being what they wished it could be, and they know it could be.
Right.
And they know that the cost of taking that ladder, which is on one career wall or whatever, and moving it, they currently think the cost is too great.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do, and so they feel stuck, they feel disempowered, they feel low levels of enthusiasm, and they just don't know what to do. And since they don't know what to do, I think depression is right there.
Okay, so let's look at how we start breaking out of that, whether it's, you know, breaking away from our comfort zone or our fear of the unknown, or, you know, we're scared because, geez, I'm busy already. I'm just going to get even busier and have more responsibility and be even more overwhelmed. How do we start living the courageous life?
You know, I think what I do as a consultant, and I think what this book does, I help people to think. And when I'm sitting with a leader in an organization, I pull them away from the tyranny of the urgent and say, let's think. Let's think about what you really want to be and do as a leader or where you want this organization to grow. And the first step for an individual is to sit down and pull away and start thinking and clearly defining what is it their life really truly wants to reflect and represent. What are their dreams? What are their passions? And the first thing that I do when I sort of walk a person through this process, I say, you really need to get away and define very clearly what are your three things. What are your values, your personal values? What are your personal strengths? And what is your overall life calling? And you have to know your values, because the values, when you're pursuing a dream, you never want to compromise your values.
Would you share a couple of your values with us, would you?
My values are faith, family, independence, and integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And those values are values that I don't want to compromise when I'm pursuing a dream. So those are the guideposts. The strengths, the reason you need to be extremely clear about your strengths is because those are like the winds in the sails of your boat. You want to leverage your strengths. If you know your strengths, you can leverage your strengths to help you get to a dream more quickly.
Okay.
And the reason you want clarity around your overall life calling is because that's sort of like the large umbrella. The large umbrella of my life is helping people and organizations reach their potential in ways that advance God's kingdom or whatever. So that, to me, is the foundation. From there, once you know your values, which are your guideposts, your strengths, which are the winds in your sail, and your overarching life, what you want your life to be about in general, then you start creating. You get away again. You start creating, what are some dreams that I have? And you don't say no to any possible dream. You list them in your journal, list them. And you just let them pour out. And then at some point, you come to a point and you choose the dream that fits most closely with your values and strength and overall life calling. That's a very simplistic model in the book. Walks you through quite a bit more detail in that process, but the skeleton method is that right there. And once you pick your dreams, then you develop a path on how to get to that dream and wrap some accountability around you and some people to help you, you know, experts to help you indeed get there.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll go into that a little
okay.
bit more deeply. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Dr. Ron Brown, and his new book is called The Courageous Life: Proven Methods for Reaching Your Dreams and Potential.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Thank you for being afraid.
She's saucy, she's sassy. She can be shockingly candid and unpretentiously deep. Rue McClanahan, best known as the Golden Girls Blanche DuVoe, joins Vicky on Conversations Live next Monday at noon. She's dynamic proof that many things can and do get better with age, and that even a small-town girl with a dream can make it big. Tune in next Monday to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for a chat with Rue McClanahan on life, love, and learning. Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We're talking today, in this first segment, about living the courageous life. In the second segment, we'll be looking at understanding your child's puzzling behavior with Dr. Stephen Curtis. Right now, I'm talking to Dr. Ron Brown, and his new book is called The Courageous Life: Proven Methods for Reaching Your Dreams and Potential. So I wonder if we could just continue on from that. Once we've got our values sorted, and everybody talks about the importance of surrounding ourselves with positive, upbeat people. I'm telling you, that can be hard to do at times. Everybody knows that. I'm not sharing any secrets here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how do we go about that?
Great question. And you know, when we are pursuing a dream, it's going to be tough at times. And unless we can maintain a positive and mental attitude and belief in our spirit, we're going to give up and walk away. And we've all seen people who have stepped toward a dream at some point in their life and then just walked away from it because it got too tough, too hard. But we always have to remember that our daily attitude is a choice. You know, Viktor Frankl is a great example of this. And he, you know, spent 3 years in a Nazi prisoner of war camp in World War II. And what kept him going in those 3 years when he lost his wife, lost his family, was his stern belief that we each have the freedom to choose our own attitude. Abraham Lincoln said, a person is as happy as they choose to be.
Yeah.
And I really believe when it comes to pursuing a dream, someone told me once that we're the average of the five people that we hang out the most with, which means we're the average of them financially, spiritually, relationally, socially, intellectually. And if we're hanging around people who don't believe in themselves and their potential, and we are hanging around people who have a victim mentality and are naysayers, they're going to drain us. And when you're creating pursuing a dream, you have to recreate, part of this recreating part of your life, a group of people who believe in dreams. They believe in people reaching out, taking steps of risk and stepping through fears and reaching their potential, and they have advice and expertise to help you reach your dream.
Okay. What do you find when you're working with people is typically the hardest issue for them to overcome?
I think, number one, doubt.
Mm.
You know, doubt in themselves and their ability to indeed attain what is pounding in their heart. Doubt. Number two, closely, is fear. Closely aligned with that fear of the unknown.
Yeah, and when they are full of doubt, which, you know, I've heard some extremely successful and powerful people say they go through that same self-doubt. What do you recommend they do? How do they overcome? How do they deal with it?
To me, I struggle. We all struggle with that self-doubt, and that is the primary barrier I need to plow through when I'm pursuing a new venture, writing a new book or whatever. And how I do is I surround myself, I do lunches, I take people out for lunch, I read books that help me to believe. There's three people that I intentionally am building relationships, have built relationships with, because they are positive people who have created great lives for themselves and they think I can do the same.
Mm.
And so when I take the cheap investment and spend $20 to bring them to, you know, Cheddar's or something, you know, that is a rich reward on my investment, because just spending an hour, hour and a half with them and telling them about my dream, asking for advice, I mean, I come out of there pumped.
Yeah, makes such a difference.
It does. And number two, I read autobiographies of people who have pursued a dream or accomplished a courageous calling. And number three, I read books by, you know, Jack Canfield and Vincent Peale, and those books there just talk about the power of belief.
Yeah. I think CDs always work really well as well when you're listening to motivational CDs, because you can't be listening to that and doubting yourself at the same time.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend buying the CD, Earl Nightingale's The Strangest Secret.
The Strangest Secret. I've not heard of that.
Earl Nightingale is the grandfather of the self-help movement. And he wrote a CD of a talk he gave to his sales group. It became a bestseller talk. And that was the first CD I listened to many years ago, which sort of got me on my whole dream, this whole track of helping people, encouraging people to step out towards their potential and dream. And I highly recommend, you can do a search on Google on the internet, Earl Nightingale's Strangest Secret.
Okay, I'll look out for that.
Yeah.
So what once we've got an idea of what it is we want to do, we're almost at the end of our segment right now. What is the one thing that you want to leave our listeners with to push them forward, to help them live a courageous life?
It all starts with being crystal clear about what you want your life to be about. Even before the doubt and fear set in, you have to know, what is that passion in my heart? And the thing is, you don't have to look for it. Your dream is already in your heart. It's probably been buried and suppressed, under our need to pay our bills or bring our kids to school or whatever. But your dreams are there, and I'm just encouraging people to reach down into their hearts and their minds, to reach down inside them, take the time and rediscover that dream that has been trying to get out and manifest itself in your life. And then when you've defined that dream, start creating a pragmatic plan to get there. Well, your first five steps to get there, and then start moving in that direction.
Sounds good. Where can people find information on you, Ron?
My website is www.couragenet.com. www.couragenet.com.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Vicki.
And my guest was Dr. Ron Brown. His book, The Courageous Life, Proven Methods for Reaching Your Dreams and Potential. We're going to take a quick break and we will come right back. We're going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Curtis about understanding your child's puzzling behavior. Please stay with us.
I've got to follow that dream wherever that dream may lead me. I got to follow that dream.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hey, this is Vicki St. Clair with Conversations Live. Have you checked out Book Talk lately? Every week, Conversations Live produces a 2 to 4 minute book review via podcast. You can listen to our book reviews anytime at KKNW. Just log on to 1150kknw.com or download them onto any MP3 player at your convenience. We review an eclectic range of books, from humorous vignettes to essays on life and living, to debut novels and novels that have been around for a while that you might not have heard about. Conversations Live regular reviewer Cynthia Baxter is a voracious reader, and we're excited to bring you a new Book Talk podcast every week. Check out Book Talk at 1150kknw.com. That's Book Talk at 1150kknw.com.
Think we have freedom of speech? In 2007, more than 400 books in the United States were banned or challenged. Join Vicki next Monday at noon on Conversations Live for a discussion on which books were challenged in 2008 and why we should care about conservative challenges that try to dictate what we can and can't read. Banned Books Week runs from September 26th through October 3rd. Find out more information at the American Library Association or by emailing Vicki at info@conversationslive.net. Tune in Monday at noon for Banned Books on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us if you just are joining us now. When should you seek professional help for your child's behavior? What's considered normal socially? And how can you cope with learning challenges? These are just a few of the issues discussed in my guest's book, Understanding Your Child's Puzzling Behavior. Dr. Stephen Curtis is currently in practice at Lifespan right here on Bainbridge Island. For the past 25 years, he's specialized in the assessment and treatment of children with emotional, learning, behavioral, and developmental changes. He's an advisor on the board of SENG, an organization devoted to the social and emotional needs of gifted children, and he's joining us today. Welcome. Welcome, Dr. Stephen Curtis.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Glad to have you here. And so I want to begin with, we hear so many stories about kids at school today and the problems they're having and the problems they're having at home and in their personal and social life. What do you mean, for the purposes of this book, by puzzling behavior?
I use the term puzzling behavior because I don't want to label a child unnecessarily. There's a lot of labels being thrown around in our field, such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or Asperger's disorder or sensory processing disorder. There's just all these different types of diagnoses. And I think a lot of people jump to conclusions when they're concerned about a child and they start diagnosing these kids prematurely. And I use the term puzzling to imply that what you really should do is sit back and do a careful assessment before you jump in and say your child has, you know, some type of diagnosis. So it's just a great term that doesn't really, you know, peg the child.
Yeah, that's good, because we are so into quick fixes these days. So you're a psychologist. You've been a school psychologist, or are you still a school psychologist?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So what is your goal in your work, in your day-to-day work?
My goal is, you know, I've been a child clinical psychologist, a school psychologist, special education director at Seattle University. I was trained at UW Medical School. And so I know both the school and the, you know, medical settings. And my goal is to really figure out kids and try to find out how, you know, best to help them. And, you know, since we are so medically oriented, we're brain oriented. Just look at the books that are selling really hotly, or, you know, very focused on the brain. But, you know, sometimes it isn't the brain. Sometimes it's the environment and other factors that are creating problems. And I really believe that, you know, when parents are concerned about the needs of their struggling child, they need to step back and do a careful assessment. And I've written a book that's parent-friendly that they can follow, that outlines steps that can help them understand the needs of their child. And when they do, or if they do get professional help, they're that much further along and they're less likely to make mistakes on, you know, figuring their child out.
Right. I have to say, I've rarely seen a book with so many resources in. There are a ton of resources in this book. But I want to ask you why behavioral issues seem so prevalent today. They seem so more than 10, 15, 20 years ago. Is that true, or are we just hearing more about it?
Well, you know,
it?
I'm just writing an article about that, Parenting in the Age of Change, and I've been actually going back each decade in time and trying to figure out if there were problems or there weren't problems. And, you know, I really think that kids have had problems all the way along, and, you know, maybe there could be more issues right now, but, you know, when you think about all the events that our country's been through, such as the, you know, stock market crash and depression and World War II and the Vietnam War, I mean, think about the 60s where, you know, it went from the 50s to this wonderful family to these kids all rebelling and running away, you know.
Right.
You think
right.
about all those events and you realize, you know, there's kids have had issues all the way along in time. And I think we have to realize that, and, you know, we don't give enough attention on the kids that are really making it out there. If you interview some of these kids that come out of high school these days around, you know, even around Puget Sound, you'd be amazed. And so, I write about this because you got to look at things in context. I don't think all the kids are out of control. You know, delinquency down. We have, you know, kids may be more you know, anxious and things, there's different problems. You know, there's oftentimes different problems depending on the decade. But, you know, a lot of kids are doing really well. And I think we just need to realize that there's always been challenges in parenting. You know, we have to have hope. We just have to kind of tend to the child's needs and do the best we can.
Okay, so how do we begin, Dr. Steve, to tell if we're worried about something with our child, or, you know, he's been sent home with a report saying, you know, he's not learning very well, or she needs to improve on this and that, and she's being disruptive in class. How do we know the difference between a disorder and just normal kid behavior?
Right. It's really tough. I think the first thing you need to do is you know, talk to some people around you, you know, other parents that experienced a similar situation. You know, collaborating with other parents is really a big issue, I mean, big way to find out more information. Talk to the natural providers in your child's life. And what I mean by that, I mean teachers, school counselors, and then your doctor, such as a pediatrician and family practice doctor. I really, or if you're more into the naturopath, you know, maybe your naturopath, but I really believe in using the natural caregivers first, because they see both normal and abnormal behavior. And, for example, if a child's having trouble doing their homework in third grade, you know, if you went to a teacher and said that, the teacher might say, you know, a lot of kids have this trouble because that's the first time we start giving homework.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they normalize it a bit. Now, you know, once you get information, it's good to just, you know, try to, you know, listen to what they have to say, but you also need to listen to your own gut. You know, you know your child more than anybody, so don't take what everybody says to be absolute fact, and you just have to kind of think about that on your own. But if you still aren't satisfied, you know, then it's time to go to a specialist, and that's really tough, you know, which one to pick, and that's another reason I read my book, because I've identified 30 different types of specialists that
I know.
Parents can go to.
I was staggered when I saw 30 different kinds of professionals that can help parents with children. Just amazing.
It's huge. And, you know, in the Seattle area alone, or Tacoma area, or, you know, even the rest of the United States, there's, you know, there's neurologists, psychiatrists, there's occupational therapists, speech-language pathologists, and parents get confused. I call it the quest for help. Oftentimes these parents go and see, you know, up to 20, 30 care providers before they're satisfied. And
yeah.
So
now,
I wanted to help them out. So.
Before you even get to that, Dr. Steve, you have in the book a weekly feedback log and a casual factors worksheet. You have a ton of worksheets in here that a parent can sit down with, you know, their spouse or the child and actually go through and do some checklisting here to see if this may be a real problem or just a behavioral problem.
Right.
So how do you recommend they start? Let's say they, you know, they realize, well, something's going on here. Where do we actually start as parents just talking with our children to determine if we need to go any further on that?
If you're concerned, I would step back and reflect a little bit. I would take a piece of paper and I'd write down everything that you're concerned about. It's amazing what a little bit of journaling will do. It's tough to get people to do it, but you just write on a piece of paper, just kind of free writing, and say, you know, what am I concerned about with my child? And just start writing, okay? And then once you're done, do that for a few minutes. Take that piece of paper, sit back and reflect on it and say, okay, what can I do about this? You know, what needs to be done? You know, if you're still confused, then, you know, it's a good time to start analyzing behavior more systematically. And I've taught how to do that in my book. Essentially, you know, if you had a film crew following your child around every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you had the media doing that, and, you know, the child didn't know this was happening, if you had, like, this running picture of your child, and then you watched it, you'd be quite amazed. You'd probably start figuring some things out, because environmental influences, despite what a lot of people are saying about the brain, environmental influences are huge. Culture, I mean, it's amazing how it impacts behavior and learning. And
when you say culture, are you talking about our own birth culture or society, the American culture today?
Yeah, I use the term culture broadly. You know, culture, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, multicultural. You know, that's kind of one way to talk about it. I talk about just culture in terms of, like, American culture. Like, we have certain values, like independence. We believe independence. Huge, you know, so certain value systems like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody's on board that kids all should be independent by the time they're 18, that can have a huge impact versus the culture that says, you know, we believe that children just need to be tied to the family. That has another impact. And based upon what your values are within your own particular culture is, you know, you can judge whether someone's pathological or not. So in a culture where people are dependent on their family and they want to go away and move to a different state, they're seen as abnormal. Where in my particular background, the push was independence and get out in the world and, you know, go make your mark, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Right,
that's considered normal.
Yeah.
I mean, just things like that. And if you just sit and, you know, you can see how behavior is influenced by, you know, following the child around, but you can't really do that. But what you can do is try to analyze, you know, what kind of things are coming before the concern, what kind of things are coming after, and just try to get some kind of sense of what's going on.
Okay.
If you do those exercises, it's amazing what kind of aha moments you can have. And you can do that before you see any provider. Or if you are seeing providers, do it anyway. It's amazing what you can come up with.
Yeah, one of the things you talk about is identifying both the strengths and weaknesses of your child, because
right.
I think often our society focuses on our weaknesses and this is what you must improve upon.
Right.
Why is it so important to identify strengths, too?
Well, you know, a lot of kids I work with, the parents come in and they just have a laundry list of behaviors they're concerned about. You know, and I do this every day. I see probably 5 or 6 kids every day. And so I hear, you know, they tantrum, they don't do their... You know, they won't clean their room, and they're doing some kind of odd social behavior, and they're, you know, jumping on the couch. And I mean, just and it just goes on and on until you got, like, maybe 15 things you're concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I challenge any adult to work on 15 things at once. And that's what often we try to do with our kids. We want them to shape up and socialize and do this and do that. And there's no way a child can change all that. I mean, it's hard to change one behavior. It's hard to stop eating candy as an adult, let alone change your whole being. And so oftentimes we require the kids to do that. So but what really the best approach is to try to figure out what strengths your child has. For example, if they're very good at talking, then maybe you get them in debate or writing or something. What strengths they have, you build those strengths up, and then you try to identify the crucial things that you want to work on, and then you work on those as well. And so you kind of make a strength-based plan.
Mm.
People who are working on their strengths and areas of passion are much more likely to work on the areas that they find challenging. And that's kids and adults. But oftentimes these kids that have problems, we just, you know, bombard them all day long with things that they need to change. And strength-based will really get them happier and more receptive to work.
Yeah, definitely sounds reasonable. So, what if we decide that we've gone through? You have extensive checklists in the book here, or plans that a parent can work with on their child one-on-one. If a parent decides, you know, we do need professional help, how do you recommend they go about finding the right? First of all, the right help, and then help that is good help.
Because I really believe in you know, you go to your the natural people in the child's life and ask for who do you think would be good for my son or daughter to see. And they usually have, you know, a list of names that they work with. And, you know, especially like family practice, pediatricians or naturopaths, they're used to working with all these different professionals. And so they can help narrow it down and give you a referral, you know, a referral source.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in reality, you may have to visit 2 or 3 people before you get the answer. And I think it's good to know that may have to happen. But once you do get a good referral source, a good person to go to, try to research that person's background. And usually people have to, you know, disclose their credentials and just try to figure out where they're coming from. And depending on their profession will be what they look at most. You know, like if you go to a nutritionist or something, they'll look at the diet. If you go to occupational therapist, they'll look at sensory issues. If you go to a psychologist like me, we'll look at family issues. And it is quite overwhelming, but, you know, have that natural person try to help narrow it down for you.
Mm. You talk about intervention and I think it was classroom intervention in the book, and intervention planning. Tell us what that involves.
The intervention planning?
Yeah.
You know, there's no one magical thing that you can do to, you know, change a child. But I believe that once you do all this assessment and thinking, the interventions are going to pop out at you. You know, I believe that, you know, the more you think about it, the intervention is going to happen. And I can't tell you exactly what to do every time. But my general rule of thumb, again, is to have three kind of interventions in strength-based areas and then three in areas of challenges. And you try to just have a general approach that you can keep in mind. And depending on the problem, you know, is the intervention. So if you have a child with attention problems, perhaps they're more kind of nonverbal type people or like they like to build.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would teach building and get them a bunch of Legos and, you know, just get them exposed to all those kind of things. At the same time, I'd help them learn how to control their body by, you know, having them, you know, monitor when they're, you know, being impulsive, and I'd talk to them about that. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Okay.
And then also in my book, though, I pointed to other resources. So if you decide that you do have a child with ADHD, then I pointed to the resources that I believe are most effective in that area.
You talk about gifted children and how they are often misdiagnosed. How
right.
So?
Boy, that is a huge field that I'm getting into. You know, I never thought about that. The word giftedness has a lot of baggage with it. You know, some
sure.
people associate it with, you know, affluent, kind of pushy parents and, you know, special kids. But it's not that way at all. I mean, there's kids that are born that are just, like, so off the charts in terms of cognitive ability that they need special help. You know, along with that, though, they often have these quirky behaviors where they kind of over-focus on things or they kind of have odd social skills. And, you know, the characteristics of giftedness oftentimes look like autism, you know. And so some of these kids are getting misdiagnosed and put into, you know, classrooms for the kids with autism when, in fact, they're brilliant and they need work, you know, in their areas of strength, their cognitive skills. And I've been getting very involved with a thing groups called Social Emotional Needs of the Gifted, or Supporting the Emotional Needs of the Gifted. And I've just been going to these conferences and hearing these stories about these brilliant people, you know, and about their childhoods, and it's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a book called Misdiagnosis by James Webb who actually goes through this issue.
It's quite amazing just how gifted some children are, and that can cause problems as they grow up if it's not dealt with properly, because
right.
they're not always necessarily gifted adults.
No.
That's been my experience. But handling your frustration, let's talk about that, because that's a big
okay.
one. If you've got, you know, a child who is misbehaving, especially in public, it can be very embarrassing and very trying. How do you recommend people handle with outbursts of yelling and screaming, tantrum throwing?
In public, okay. You know, the interesting thing is I have kids as well, and So I spent the bulk of my career in Alaska, and one time I was in a toy store with my toddler son, and a couple of my clients right there with me, and my son didn't want to get off the train. He just started, you know, throwing things and yelling and screaming and stuff like that. Here I am, the local expert on behavior.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, so I have dealt with this firsthand, and, you know, oftentimes there's not much you can do publicly except pick up your child and get them out of there. And, you know, so, or you just kind of, I guess there's a term like duck and cover, I don't know, but you just kind of pick up your child and get out of there. You know, kids can have a lot of power out in public, and it's embarrassing. I guess, you know, my approach would either remove the child from the situation or pretend that no one's watching and just deal with it. And, just, you know, just kind of put up with your embarrassment and frustration and just deal with it.
Right.
And then the next time, and then when you get home, really, you know, talk to them about it. And next time you go on an outing, talk to them about it. Try to set up some ground rules, and you know, and eventually it'll get better. Now, sometimes these parents have two kids or three kids that are close in age, and you know, they're often like, you know, puppies or something. It's really hard to manage three at once, especially if you're a single parent. And there's not much you can do until they get a little bit older, other than to contain and do the best you can. But you know, with the frustration, just do the best you can, and know over time that most kids start learning impulse control and start following the rules and behaving.
Mm. What about boys in crisis? Because I have a friend who did a dissertation on this, and it according to her studies and studies that I've seen in the media, boys are in trouble in our schools. What's your take on that?
Well, it's huge, and nobody seems to want to talk about it because there's this organization called Learn.org, and they did a national study of the boys that are, having crisis, and they're actually getting, they're not getting to college as much. Their GPA is going down, test scores going down, and of course, certain areas are the same, but they're dropping like flies. And when I was a professor at Seattle University, we didn't have that many males in our classes, and it's just quite obvious. And then you see kids like, might practice like mine. I get a lot of boys, and the boys don't want to do the homework. They don't want to jump hoops. They just don't like higher education. And it's a huge, huge concern for me. And then you see it in the media. So a lot of these boys are getting pegged as having some kind of disorder when it's kind of a phenomenon that's going on.
Is there some common theme running through their life?
Well, what this organization, Learn.org, said that what happened is the way they're teaching in the schools, that if you just gave these kids tests, the boys tests, like a midterm and a final, and that you didn't require as much homework early on, because a lot of the grades are that they would do a lot better. A lot of the decrease in grades has nothing to do with the boys not understanding or learning the content. It has to do with them turning their homework in and getting all the assignments done.
Mm.
And it has to do with the organization. And I don't know what it is about we boys, but I don't think we're as good at multitasking until we're older as the girls are. And a lot of education requires a lot of projects and multiple assignments and day planners and all this kind of stuff. And I work with these boys who don't even hardly know how to tie their shoes, and they're given a day planner and they have to write down their homework.
Mm.
And my son alone, he's in seventh grade, he came home with a huge backpack and three full notebooks of assignments, and each notebook had 10 tabs. And I looked at that and I said, I couldn't even manage three notebooks with 10 tabs, and that's what they're kind of requiring them to do. And the kids that can't multitask have a hard time. And so I think the kids just kind of shut down. They'd rather just have a test and say, tell me what I need to know. I'll know it and I'll get it done. And but I think that's one of the big things. And oftentimes the boys don't want to jump hoops. They don't want to just do something because, and I'm trying to teach them to organize and say, you have to jump hoops and, college education still is a good thing and that kind of stuff. So I talked to them a lot about this.
Right. And it sounds in part as though our education system is at fault there. We're almost at the end of our show. What is the one thing that you'd like to leave our listeners with if they're worried about any kind of puzzling behavior from their child?
If they're worried about puzzling behavior, I think really try to sit back and analyze the behavior before you jump to conclusions. Be careful about the quick fix, and I mean just rushing in for, some kind of intervention that, without really carefully thinking about it. Know that if you put your time and effort into figuring out the needs of your child, more than likely they're going to be okay. There's a lot of kids who have had just horrendous childhoods that have turned out to be, world-class leaders. And so you have to keep that in mind. You got to keep the hope in mind. I do want to say, if parents are interested, I do have a parent workshop on October 23rd, and they could always sign up for that at www.lifespanpress.com. And I'd love to work with parents. I love working with parents. I think one reason I have a workshop is I love parents. Collaboration. I think just collaborate with other parents and try to get connected and do the best you can.
Okay, so give us that website again for that workshop that's coming up.
Okay, it's www.lifespanpress.com, and there's a link to enroll for a parent workshop.
Okay.
And I also have a blog on there too, and I try to just write a lot of my thoughts down, and people are free to comment on that, because I just love talking about these issues.
Okay, sounds good. Really great book, full of really great information and some really solid resources. As I said at the beginning of the show, I've never seen a book with so many resources.
Thank you.
So thanks for being with us today. Thanks for sharing your information.
All right. It was great being here, Vicki.
Sure.
Have a great day.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for being with us today. My last guest, of course, was Dr. Stephen Curtis. His book is called Understanding Your Child's Puzzling Behavior, A Guide for Parents of Children with Behavioral, Social, and Learning Challenges. And that's it from us this week. I want to, again, say thank you for being with us today. We will be back next Monday at noon with all live new programming. And until then, live well, live strong. We'll see you then.
She's saucy, she's sassy, she can be shockingly candid and unpretentiously deep. Rue McClanahan, best known as the Golden Girls' Blanche DuVoe, joins Vicki on Conversations Live next Monday at noon. She's dynamic proof that many things can and do get better with age, and that even a small-town girl with a dream can make it big. Tune in next Monday to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for a chat with Rue McClanahan on life, love, and learning. Think we have freedom of speech? In 2007, more than 400 books in the United States were banned or challenged. Join Vicki next Monday at noon on Conversations Live for a discussion on which books were challenged in 2008 and why we should care about conservative challenges that try to dictate what we can and can't read. Banned Books Week runs from September 26th through October 3rd. Find out more information at the American Library Association or by emailing Vicki at info@conversationslive.net. Tune in Monday at noon for Banned Books on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.